So, thank you very much for attending this workshop. It was a great opportunity to have experts in a different field in metabolic and redox signaling. I will take the opportunity first to expose why you are here, why we did ask me. So without making a resume again, this is the end picture of what I show this morning, in English this time. So the rod photoreceptors are making a product of the NXNL1 gene, and they make two products. The first one is a normal product which splice the exon of the gene, the intron of the gene, and make a thyroxine RDCVFL, which interact with tau, prevent its oxidation, its hyperphosphorylation, and its aggregation in the retina. The same protein is known to reduce lipid peroxidation in rod photoreceptor cells, and this lipid peroxidation is probably the action of RDCVFL against photooxidative damage, the damage caused by rod photoreceptor by excessive light. At the same time, for a reason which we are working hard on it, in the rods, the gene is not fully spliced. There is naturally intron retention, and the presence of a subcodon in frame within the intron make a truncated thyroxine, much as TRX80 identified by Al Holmgren. But for TRX80, it is probably a proteolytic cleavage, while here it is clearly differential alternative splicing which creates the two forms. Thyroxine are in generally secreted by a pathway which is absolutely unknown at time. So most of the thyroxine are secreted, including RDCVF. So RDCVF is protecting the cone, and this is one major advance in understanding the secondary degeneration of cone. And the secondary degeneration of cone is prevented by RDCVF by making a complex with a splice variant of the Basigin gene, which encode specifically in the retina for a third IG loop extracellular. This protein is unknown to be a receptor, so we identify GLUT1 as its partner on the membrane, and the association in the complex between RDCVF, BSG1, and GLUT1 make an increase in glucose uptake by cone photoreceptors. So this is basically the hypothesis of the mechanism. Then after, we show clearly in cone-enriched culture that the trophic activity of RDCVF depends on the aerobic glycolysis, which is making carbohydrate intermediate as for the cancer cells to probably participate in the outer segment renewal as promoting synthesis of triglyceride, I think, in this case. We show also if we use a oxidative damage from the publication, the glucose 6-phosphate is turning down to the pantose phosphate pathway, which is important to generate NADPH to control the redox status of protein, among them thyroxine. So we have shown also, using single-cell PCR, that RDCVFL expression in the cone is important for the cone to be able to be protected against oxidative stress, which occur in the second phase of the disease. So as José said, the loss of rods will trigger the loss of trophic support to RDCVF, and the cone, which has no longer vision because no outer segment, will probably die in the second wave due to oxidative damage. So this is the main model. And now I will build some hypotheses. Some of them have been part of discussion of the paper. Others are more new. So the five working hypotheses address question which you are expert in trying to help me to understand. Just tell me I am in the wrong way, it's not this. So the first one is that we made the hypothesis that RDCVF actually is an allosteric regulator of GLUT1. So the reason for that is, first of all, we discover that the increase in glucose uptake is not leading to an increase in expression or translocation of the glucose transporter to the membrane. So basically, there is no change in GLUT1 expression at the surface of the cone, only its activity change. So we also made this experiment with Géraldine, which removed RDCVF at time zero in order to measure the increase between the negative control, PCDS3, and RDCVF, the uptake of glucose as a derivative of a fluorescent probe. So at 1 hour after having removed RDCVF, you see that there's a large difference between the RDCVF and the negative control, which basically decrease at 2 hours and decrease to nothing, no difference at 3 hours. Giving a thought on this, we believe that what happened is that when RDCVF is no longer in the media, it escapes the complex. Complex between BSG1 and GLUT1, which can be found in HCK293 cells, which have no RDCVF. So the complex doesn't need RDCVF to be made. And probably something happened, structural change happened here to increase the uptake of glucose. So following this hypothesis, which is very much why we contact Anthony, when we did in our paper the combination of increasing glucose concentration in the media and adding RDCVF, we discover, for example, in blue, that if you increase the glucose concentration in the media from 15 to 30 millimolar, cell alive, which we believe depend on the glucose uptake, is increased by this blue dot. If you add this 15 millimolar to 15 to 30 millimolar in the presence of RDCVF here, plus and plus, you have a much larger increase. So there's a statistical significant difference between the RDCVF condition and the in 15 and 30 millimolar glucose concentration. So being not so familiar this last 10 to 20 days with enzymology, we suppose that this represents a Vmax, so the maximum transport of glucose across the transporter, Vmax1 in the absence of RDCVF, and this represents Vmax2, which is the Vmax of the transporter in the presence of RDCVF. So what could happen, and we thought about this, is the only way Vmax of the glucose transport term GLUT1 was modified is Anthony Carreter published that in red blood cells, there is an equilibrium between GLUT1, which has Vmax1, a certain Vmax, and GLUT1 as a tetramer, which has increased Vmax, so higher capacity to transport glucose in a tetrameric form. So interestingly enough, the work by Anthony suggests that the only way to transfer this dimer to this tetramer, which has an increased Vmax, is by tetramerization through forming a disulfide bridge between the subunit. And this is basically induced by oxidative agent, and it is relaxed to the early stage when you remove or when you add a reducing agent. So this inspired me that maybe RDCVF is sort of an oxidative agent which trigger dimeric to tetrameric form, which basically will increase the Vmax of the glucose transport onto the cone. So first of all, in order to work, you have to have an oxidative agent. And why RDCVF, which is a truncated thyroxine, has no thiol oxidoreductase activity? As for TRX80, it has the catalytic site, which means that the catalytic site, the two cysteines which are able to reduce oxidized cysteine, are here. It is just that because it doesn't contain the green part, which is the part which is necessary, I think, to interact with thyroxine reductase and to make it back reduce. Once it is oxidized, it stays oxidized and no longer reduced. It's just one shot. So we look in the literature to the question, what is the redox status of extracellular RDCVF? And this, I have no experiment. We just don't know by chemical analysis that effectively RDCVF, the short isoform, the trophic factor, exists as a protein, at least when it's made in E. coli, as oxidized and reduced form. So the transition exists. So the work of Onjoy has shown that one way to increase thyroxine secretion is to induce oxidative stress by using oxygen peroxide. So there is, in this four condition, which has been published more than 10 years ago, an increase in thioredoxine, which is not RDCVF, it's in the literature, it's thioredoxine. It's just taking thioredoxine as an example of this. So in this condition, we might think that the RDCVF form, which is secreted in the extracellular between photoreceptor, is actually oxidized, which is a question. My thing, I would like to have your advice on this. So the mechanistic hypothesis, which is risky, but it is for discussion, is that Arnold has shown clearly that thyroxine became oxidized when it reduced its X substrate. But if the thyroxine at start is oxidized, which is a question I ask, does this reaction is possible? So the GLUT1 will be reduced, but RDCVF oxidized. And then with the same reaction, you will make an oxidized form of the GLUT1, while RDCVF became reduced. And this oxidized form will correspond to the bridge, disulfide bridge existing between the two dimers forming the tetramer. Je continue ou? Possible. Okay, very good. So I would like to discuss this further after the talk, but at least this was my first working hypothesis. So RDCVF will be an allosteric regulator of GLUT1 through its binding to BASG1. So I just add one last thing on this hypothesis, is that Redzik and Eisenbaser, University of Colorado, they made basically the crystal structure of the IG0 domain, which is the binding site for RDCVF. So we know RDCVF is binding to this protein, but not to this one. So BASG2, which is a more ubiquitously expressed form of the BASIGIN gene. And obviously, this exists as a dimer on solution. So I don't know if it's an argument to add to my proposal. It was accepted before, so I don't have to insist on this. So hypothesis two. So the hypothesis two is also related to metabolism. So
excuse me, can I ask you a question?
Yeah, it's for.
When you culture your cones, you're looking for the trophic effect of the
Ah, this is it.
Yes, on the CDF. Did you try to add in the culture medium a low dose of reductants?
No.
To beta blocker ethyl or something like
no,
that?
No, we have not tried.
So because this is an easy experiment to me to have. If it's working as an oxidase, by binding to the BLG receptor, and then you oxidize, which is possible, the direction would be possible, then you might inhibit this effect by adding low dose of two beta.
Yeah. At the same time, we don't know if it will be relaxing the GLUT1 tetramer to dimer, or it acts on RDCDF. So. There is two modes of action possible. So you make RDCDF reduce. So no longer it will oxidize GLUT1. But the reducing agent will make GLUT1 be dimer, so you don't see anymore the tetradimerization.
Do you know that there's reverse regulation of GLUT1? Which you don't know.
What?
You will know, you have proof, evidence for a redox regulation.
Yeah, no, it was just, no, no, but every idea is good. Géraldine a noté, je pense. OK. No, no, it's a good idea. OK. So
mouse lymphocytes only grow if you give them a very low amount of tuberculosis clones. So for reasons that have not been understood, there's a lot of phenomenology about redox agent in culture media. So that's,
Okay, so I'm trying to address, so after there's plenty of discussion, the second hypothesis. So the second hypothesis from our research. As José said, the RDCV signaling may extend from monogenic inherited retinal degeneration to a more complex disease, which is edge-related macular degeneration. So a long time ago, we had started with the Center for National Center for Genotyping here in Évry to assess, does NXNL1 contain a risk allele for AMD? Obviously, we gather a very large group of AMD and control from a sub-consortium made in Europe, found many of these genes using GWAS, which look for the frequency of allele and the difference in frequency between the control and the disease person, and found basically all the genes that has been published. So we then did not publish our work and were contacted by a more, even larger consortium, which is the International AMD Genetic Consortium, which involved people in many people in the States, Iceland, Austria, Japan, China, India, Europe, all the countries in Europe. Iceland, so everybody's almost there. And then we discover in two papers a total of 34 genes associated with edge-related macular degeneration or loci. And this loci indicate some of them are here in two papers in Nature Genetics. So many of the genes identified are related to Florian's thing in complement, and people are very eager to work on this domain of possible complement activation. But I noticed from the early gene that there is a lactate transporter in this, which is SLC16A8. So SLC16A8 is one of the lactate transporter which is important in the retinal pigment epithelium. Actually, it is expressed only in all the body, which I'm very sure, in the basal part of the retinal pigment epithelium. So the second hypothesis is here, which I'm working on with Laurence, which is here also. So basically, in a normal situation, so in a normal retina, the rods produce RDCVF, which increase glucose uptake and promote aerobic glycolysis to renew the outer segment. But one of the products of this reaction is lactate. And we know that lactate is acidifying the retina and make the photoreceptor dysfunctional. So for example, if you take this gene, which is just the protein is just there, If you knock out this gene in the mouse, basically what happens is that the retina will get acidified and the photoreceptor will not function anymore. So we believe, and there is in the work a causative mutation into a splicing site into the SLC16A8, which is responsible for the AMD phenotype. So it's a mixture of something which is marker of a defect in the gene and some causative mutation in AMD, which clearly indicate, at least predict, that there is a splicing. So the idea from the early beginning, which is maybe more complex than this, is that if you don't have, if you have the risk allele, you have a dysfunction of the lactate here, which will promote increase in lactate concentration in the inner retina. And then, because the lactate as glucose transporter are facilitated transporter, actually the transporter here, we have a lot of problem to function in this direction because of an increased concentration in this one. So the hypothesis here is that because the risk allele in SLC16A8 will cause an increase in lactate or a tendency to increase the lactate in the retina and opposed to the aerobic glycolysis, you will be counteracting the aerobic glycolysis. So the cone outer segment will also be reduced, which what is observed in age-related macular degeneration at the fovea. So my just question the same kind of question than the one before is that do you believe that you can revert, Anthony, the transport of the lactate transporter if you increase the lactate extracellularly?
It's bidirectional. So it will transport, unless there's a proton gradient, it will transport from high to low concentration.
So the scheme is if you have a defect here, you have an increase in the retina, and you oppose, you will oppose.
Yes.
Okay, so just to be safe. Okay, this was my second hypothesis. Thank you. Two hypotheses. Okay, so this was for Matthew. Matthew, who is not here, but I show it. So there's an observation which has been by Matt Lava a long time ago, is that during the maturation of rod photoreceptor in the mouse retina, the outer segment first increased in size. So before the outer segment reached the retinal pigment epithelium, it increased. After, when it reached the epithelium, it is phagocytized in one end and synthesized at the other. Okay? But during development, there is a period when a rod photoreceptor has no outer segment and increase this outer segment. So we found in our transcriptome data that there is evident, it's not only exokinase 2, which is specific for aerobic glycolysis, but other genes in the glycolysis pathway, which seem to just follow, precede the outer segment growth. So the question is that in the terms of cancer biology, so nobody will answer this third hypothesis. In terms of cancer biology, there is a lot of work which has been done on the histone modification, which happened just to fix the amount of gene expression. For example, here it will be exokinase 2, which and the exokinase 2 will participate in aerobic glycolysis or the Warburg effect, mainly to produce carbohydrate in order to for the cancer cell to divide. So this is the way. So we are in the same situation where, you know, we don't know about this. We don't know about this. And this is the regeneration of the outer segment. So one of the questions to Matthew, not to people here, is that do you think that a cell. Do you think that cell, which is non-cancerous, will have a mechanism like this, which will increase by modification at the epigenetic level certain promoters or genes involved in glycolysis in order to fix them? Or is it the metabolism itself, the glucose metabolism, which entertain the genes expression?